Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, July 15th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good afternoon.
That's right, it is afternoon where you are. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning. I have a bee in my bonnet.
Oh, that's music to my ears, John. I want to talk about the bee in your bonnet, actually. You wrote on Friday, you wrote in Particle Debris about Apple and security, and specifically, the thing that kicked this off was the Zoom-related kerfuffle that we had last week.
Yeah, the theme article for Particle Debris happened to be this week from Andrew. Apple releases Mac update to remove Zoom web server. So as we know by now, Zoom inserted a secret web server to make its service function, and then Apple, and then there was the discovery that there could be malware to exploit it, and then Apple secretly removed it, and it was all a rather unsavory affair. But it started me thinking about how we've come to accept blind installs of our apps. We click on the installer and things get scattered to the four winds and secretly installed here and there. And it used to be that there was a custom. Occasionally, good developers would present an install log in front of you, a scrollable log, and you could sort of inspect what went where. But that's not in vogue anymore, and it led to this kind of problem. Mm-hmm. So I proposed that there be a new way to install apps. And what I didn't cover in the article was that it's still under the instigation of the admin user. The admin user decides to install something in slash applications, or the unprivileged user decides to install something in his own applications folder in his user directory. But in any case, once that decision is made to install an app, the app has to be structured in such a way that that Mac OS takes over the install process. And the developer no longer writes his own code and his own scripts to do things. There's a standardized install process. Mac OS takes the list, the bill of materials, if you will, from the package that's submitted in the right format to be compatible with the Mac OS install. Mac OS says, okay, I've got the request from an admin user. I've got the package in front of me. I'm going to start doling out the files with my privileges only, and I'm going to present to the user in a text window a scrollable list of what I'm installing and where, and the names of the files and the paths. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to write that out to a text file and to a folder called install log. Mm-hmm. Where anybody can go look at over the future time and say, well, here's the history of what this application did. Here's what it installed. Here's all the files. Here's where they went. And it's open to everyone. And that should be a giant leap towards doing away with these installers that think they can get away with installing hidden files that are suspect or scurrilous or in some cases just not very well thought out and subject to malware.
Yeah.
Andrew, what's your take on this? Having written at least your fair share of articles about this kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Apple's method for this. Like, I think security issues, when Apple releases a patch for them, I think it's good that they did it silently. It would be great if people got a notification after the fact of what happened, but if it's mission critical, I think it's important that Apple did that. I think it's a bit ironic, though, that Zoom installed this secret component without telling people, and then Apple removed it without telling people.
I know. It's ironic.
Yeah, that was the thing about it. I would rather Apple be super upfront about it. You know, this is the way you're supposed to do this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And considering that Apple likes to send out notifications for every little thing, like, you know, guess what? Here's a notification. It's Wednesday morning. Yay! It's Monday morning.
But that would be the one in giant letters with the big stop sign and the exclamation point that looks really bad.
But we've secretly deleted a web server from your Mac, but that doesn't merit us giving you a notification. No. Yeah.
But to make a comparison, for example, if you do anything with disk utility, like if you run First Aid on your hard drive, when you do that, you get this live updating list of everything that it's doing. And so I agree with John that I would love to see something like that for app installations, where you see a list of everything all the files that it's installing, where they're installing it at. Because I think how macOS works right now, where you just drag and drop an app into the applications folder, I think that's
dated. That's deceptive too, because what happens is the app is maybe very simple looking, and it's maybe just zipped. And so you unzip it and you drag it into the applications folder and you think, wow, what could go wrong? But the first time the application runs, the application starts installing stuff and running mm-hmm. scripts and putting things in the system. So it's more complex than it looks.
And I think when you extract a zip file, for example, I think during that process, at least on Windows, I think during that it can do silent things too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one of the things that John and I mentioned when we talked about this on a prior episode of Daily Observations. When we were talking, I think we were talking about Apple's reply, actually, like Apple releasing this update that was just going to scoop it out for you so you didn't have to go through all of the steps in Terminal. And one of the things about that was that log, and we mentioned, you know, like the App Store having the receipts file and being able to do some similar sort of thing, you know, because there's so much logging that happens already as a matter of course. You can go open up, like, there's a console viewer, and you can go open it, and you can go see all the stuff that's being written about what your computer's up to all the time. It is a fire hose of data. It's not even a fire hose. It's a waterfall of data. It is the Niagara Falls of text. It really is. And there's so much stuff that's recorded and noticed and written down with a timestamp in all of these files. And I feel like it would be the next evolution in security, almost, to be able to have those files recorded in the install log and make that something that's like a requirement of the App Store, for example. Mm-hmm. Then, like, you know, not only do I then know, like, I installed this file, but I also know what I need to do to uninstall it. If I want to uninstall it completely, I understand you can drag an application to the trash and you can empty the trash and you can't use that application anymore. But that doesn't mean that the other stuff, like all of those ancillary files that were generated, you know, the preference file, something in application support, something here, something there, getting all that cruft out. Like, I think, John, I don't remember point blank asking you if you had anything for uninstalling applications, but I know Andrew has something. Andrew has a second step he uses for uninstalling applications. I have a second step I use for uninstalling applications. John, I'm assuming you do as well?
No, I never got around to it. Okay. I haven't had a problem with it, but I'm open to suggestions about apps that do that are worth exploring.
Well, I know Andrew has one. Andrew, go ahead and give us a shout out for that app that you... I don't remember what it was. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's called App Uninstaller. Again, I don't remember who made it. It's not a very notable name, I guess. But you basically click on it. It will scan your list of apps. You click on the app that you want to install, hit the install button, and then it will give you a list of everything it has removed. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty helpful, I think.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can use a command to show all the hidden files and folders on the Mac. And if you do that and then go into your home folder, you can often find files and folders, like you said, Kelly, preferences, for example, mm-hmm. still left over from apps that you've deleted a long time ago.
So many. And then, John, what I use is an app called Hazel, which does a lot of file automation in various ways. Throughout the operating system. So I use it for some PDF magic that happens on the back end so that I don't have to do stuff when it comes to downloading receipts and things like that, making sure that those things are in the right folder and named properly. And then I use it for some other sort of system maintenance-y sort of things. And one of the things that it can do is when I throw an app away, it will pop up a window and say, all of these other files are related to the thing that you just trashed. Do you want to throw these out too? And it gives me the option to remove all of them, some of them, none of them, whatever.
Well, we shouldn't have to go munging around looking for a third-party
utility that is
from somebody who labels the app the greatest, coolest uninstaller ever made, and then you install the uninstaller and it does bad things. I'm not saying that this app that you mentioned does that, but sometimes you have to be careful about the pedigree of the app that you're using as a utility.
Yeah, and
but
I in the
this bill of materials log or the operating system knew where every file was that this app installed, then the operating system could be the caretaker of doing the uninstall, and the app wouldn't have to be providing an uninstall log.
And I feel like, to me, that would be a reasonable, we'll air quote it, restriction to put on things that go into the App Store. I think that seems like a really reasonable request. Tell me what all you're installing and tell me where you're putting it. Or on first launch, where all that stuff is. Because if you're doing, you know, if you just downloaded it from the App Store, it goes straight into your applications folder. So there's only one file at that point. So maybe there's like a first launch
.log
or something that shows like, here's all the stuff that it created.
No, that wouldn't be allowed in this new process I'm defining. So apps wouldn't be allowed to install secretly on their own. They would have to be componentized so that everything that was going to be installed was explicit.
Well, when you download from the App Store, that process is it magically appears in the application folder. That's what I'm talking about. So it's not a package where there's a log file or anything like that. And it's
so
not
you have to change the structure of the package.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I would be fine with. And, you know, if it took a half an extra step to install that kind of stuff on my computer, I'd be fine with it. I don't have a problem with it. And part of that is because I err on the side of transparency and knowledge. And I would much rather know and have that extra click than not know. And I install loads and loads of applications. I install stuff all the time. So that was why it was really nice to have Hazel just go ahead and help me uninstall stuff, because like the landscape of my applications folder is constantly changing. It's like sand dunes in there.
That stuff needs to be Sherlocked.
Yes. I would love for app uninstalls to be Sherlocked. I think that would be glorious. And in the olden days, I used an app called App Zapper, which was fantastic, and I loved it. It just so happened that once I got Hazel set up and started using it for other stuff, it gave me the opportunity to have one less application I needed. And so it was forsaken in the name of using Hazel to do it instead. So that's the story there. I'm interested to see how this evolves as far as the kind of steps that Apple has to swoop in and take, how Apple takes them, how those steps get presented to me as far as updates. Because I want to know, like, I want Apple to be more upfront about it, and I want those notifications to be very obvious. Not because I want Apple not to do it, but because I want to know that they are. And that's it. It's just a matter of transparency. It's the same thing, like, there's apps, you know, for all the apps I do install, there's a lot of apps I don't install because I can't find out what it's doing. I can't figure out what they want with my data, you know, things like that. Like, I'm pretty skeptical of a lot of things. So I always want to make sure that I'm installing something that's going to be decent. And that's a good way to do it. Speaking of installing things and keeping your data secure, Andrew, you wrote about Apple and VPNs.
Yeah, so I made a link teaser to this article at Fast Company from Michael, how do you say his last name?
Grothaus.
Grothaus?
Yeah.
Okay. So he made this argument that Apple should create their own VPN. And I'm kind of on the fence about it. Like, I trust Apple when it comes to privacy, and I think if they did make a VPN, it would be private. But at the same time, this could potentially be more user data that the government could subpoena Apple for.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really decided on this yet. But I do like it. I think it would be a good idea.
I like the idea.
It just depends on how they implement it, like no logging, for example.
Yeah. Oh, of course. I like this idea as a better than nothing solution. I think all of us on the podcast, and hopefully most people listening, have heard us bang the backup drum, as it were, and all of us have some other sort of method that we additionally use. We've talked about using covering up a cloner. I know in the past we've mentioned Backblaze, and we've talked about, just having that hard drive that gets swapped out once a month that lives somewhere else. You know, you bring it home, you copy everything to it, and you put it back at your friend's house or whatever. But in addition, we all use Time Machine, because Time Machine is that, like, automatic, in the background, better than nothing backup, right? And I feel like if Apple were to offer a VPN, this would be the same sort of thing. Like, it's better than nothing. But if you have specific needs, if part of your issue is geolocation and you need to make sure that you're sort of neutering that for whatever obviously legitimate reason you have for not wanting your location to be particularly tied to you, there are other ways to do that. But for people who need a little bit, you know, like a lightweight backup, for people who need a lightweight VPN, I feel like this would definitely be a thing that they could do. And
this is something Apple's really good at. This is a complex technology, and a lot of people don't understand it, and that's why they don't use it. And Apple's the kind of company that can take something like this that's confusing and complex in itself and wrap a beautiful GUI around it. And demonstrate in a visual way what's happening with the data by using little migration arrows or, you know, vibrating snakes like audio hijack uses to kind of suggest the flow of your data now. And that's security from Intego does that too. There's an opportunity here for a really sweet GUI wrapped around a VPN.
And not only that, but, like when I think about if Apple had a VPN, right, I think about it would just be a preference pane and you would turn it on. It'd be part of the setup assistant. Like when you go in and set everything up, like sign into iCloud. And then like when you get to the Wi-Fi network.
I don't think so. I think it should just be built into the operating system. And then when you want to turn it on, it brings up a GUI and you configure it and you watch the data flow on the GUI and you say, okay, I'm operating successfully now in a VPN mode.
Right. But I think
business. And then there's just a simple off switch when you want to turn it off.
Right. But when they roll it out, I think it becomes part of the setup assistant, you know, like when you go through the system upgrade, when you go through, like, it's a new feature that gets surfaced.
Like to see it there. The setup assistant is already so confusing.
No, it wouldn't be confusing. It would say like, which one is your Wi-Fi network? Enter the password, and then there'd be a checkbox. Do you want to enable VPN when you are not on this network?
It's too much friction at the startup point. You don't want to confront people with VPNs during the install process.
Well, you can always say set it up later.
They're eager to get their machine running.
Yeah, but you could always say set it up later, just like you can with Siri and location services. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the setup assistant now. I don't think adding a single checkbox would be a difference. And I know Apple loves their monochrome menu bar icons, but I would love if you turn on VPN and the Wi-Fi connection is green. That's how you know you're protected. Yeah. Something really small.
Yeah, that would work too.
Just a little.
Yeah, that's good.
Just a little, like, this is how you know your VPN is on. Is it green? Mm-hmm. Okay, no. Okay, then it's not on. Let's go configure it so that it's on when you're on that network or whatever. And, you know, the magic to this, I think, would be iOS. And if it's part of iCloud, like Michael puts together here. Hi, Michael, by the way. when Michael talks about, you know, if you're signing into iCloud on your device, then, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean just your laptop. Like when you take your iPad to Starbucks and sit down and read, you know, and you hop on the Starbucks Wi-Fi, like that should, you know, maybe that's a trigger. And like, yeah, this isn't your home network. So since this is not your home network, we're going to VPN that for you and just have it be really smooth and really seamless and have it work on everything where you sign into iCloud. I think that's the magic, because there's a lot of services out there that are only for macOS and Windows or only on a mobile device. And there are some that do both, but there aren't very many. And, you know, sometimes it's harder to find. And for people just trying to better than nothing it, right? You know, having Apple offer up a VPN service like that would be pretty great, I think. Especially logging. Like, if I go to Starbucks and hop on the Wi-Fi, nobody needs to know what I'm doing on the Starbucks Wi-Fi, you know?
I'm surprised and pleased and slightly envious of Michael, because I haven't seen this concept presented before, and it's all of a sudden so obvious. It's like a bolt from the blue. Like, why haven't we been talking about this all along? All of a sudden, Michael comes at us out of the blue and says, oh, and we all go, yes, yes, this is it, Michael, yes, you're brilliant. Yeah.
Yes, please. yes, please. And, you know, and part of that is because I think the thing here is twofold. First of all, the security push, as we continue to talk about here, and the kind of things that Apple is doing to make everybody's stuff more safe, and how to protect all your data on all your devices. And, like, first of all, and second of all, I can trust Apple to do this because Apple doesn't care what my network traffic looks like. Apple doesn't care what sites I visit. Apple doesn't care about any of that stuff. All Apple cares about is that I'm doing it on hardware with their logo on it. That's the part that matters to them.
Plus, it's integrated into their operating system, and nobody knows their operating systems better than Apple.
Ding.
And it's likely that they would sidestep possible security issues integrating a VPN into their own operating system. Mm-hmm. The third-party developers, good as they are, might miss a few things.
But also, this is Apple, and I know Apple doesn't care about any of that information. That's why iMessage stuff is encrypted end-to-end, so, you know, Apple can't read it, on and on and on. And, like, I know Apple doesn't care about any of that network traffic. It doesn't matter to them what I'm doing as long as I'm doing it on an Apple device. So I would trust Apple. I would sign, if that VPN service were an option and that existed in the world, I would most likely take Apple up on it, at least
me too,
for the basic stuff. Like, I don't take my iPad a lot of places, but I'd make sure that my iPad VPN was on, you know, when I'm connecting to foreign networks. I don't take it out on, generally when I have it out, it's on my own hotspot, so I don't VPN it all that often. But if I did, like, at a minimum, I would make sure that the Apple VPN stuff was set up to work the way I wanted to. And I trust Apple to do that. If this were something Google came out with on Android devices, I wouldn't use it. Like, I wouldn't feel like I could trust Google with that data.
Follow Andrew's link in the Mac Observer article and go to the Fast Company and read the entire article. It's very well written, compelling, well researched. Mm-hmm. It's a really good article by Michael Grothaus.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking the same thing as you, Kelly, where I think it should be part of the setup. Like, I agree with you, John, that there's a lot of stuff in setup now, but I think it's worth the pain a little bit out front. And then after that, you just, you know, set it up and forget about it. And it's always on, it's invisible, and it's always keeping you safe, especially from the get go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the part that makes it, you know, like, there's already a little bit of friction by having to go through the setup assistant in the first place. Like, there's a bunch of screens, you have to answer a bunch of questions, whatever kind of stuff that's going to be, whether you have to set up a passcode, you know, because it's brand new hardware, or you have to enter all your network information again, or any of that kind of stuff. Like, there's still a certain amount of stuff you have to do when you get a new device or when you upgrade the operating system on that existing device. There's still a little bit of setup assistant you have to go through. So adding a little checkbox there or a separate screen about, like, enabling VPN, I feel like, you know, maybe all the checkbox says is mark this as your home network for VPN reasons or something, you know, and then that's all you have to do. And then when you're connected to that one, you're good. And the rest of the time, it just turns the VPN on for you. Something like that would be great.
Herbert, what are they talking about here? I don't understand. Herbert, come over here. What is a VPN? Explain to me. I want to get my Mac working.
The developer data stuff is going to happen the same. Like, all that other stuff happens the same way. Location services, Siri, who is this woman and why does she want access to my computer? Like, I'm sure. So yeah, there's a lot of screens there that already have but there's stuff on them. Like it says, what's this? Or there's a little question mark and you can click on it and read more. So you can find out, and you can always not check the box and set it up later, and that's fine. But I like the idea of giving people the option. And now that we've solved security on macOS and iOS, I think we're going to have to call it for today. Andrew, thanks so much for coming.
Wait.
Yeah.
What if they created VPN kit where, like you said, if you wanted a third party option, it would be so much easier for a third party app to just plug into the system.
What if password kit, but VPNs?
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now it's official. We've solved it. It's done. I cannot wait for DubDub 2020 when Apple announces VPN kit. So anybody who's using a particular service can integrate that easily into iOS. That's going to be amazing. Also, if you are using a VPN service and you really like it, or if you've tried one that you really think people should stay away from, please let us know. You can email observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can also leave comments in the show notes. And as we find out more about this, we will definitely talk about it again. And I mean, at this time, I think that's going to be it for the show today. Like I said, we've solved security on macOS and iOS. So here we go. We're going to call it. Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
John, thanks so much for being here today.
You're very welcome.
I always love talking about particle debris with you. It's always such a good time. And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.